Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. What you guys are going to be listening to next is an interview with Heinrich Korpela and Henry Lee from Watchmaking Project. And I think you're going to get a lot of value out of this specific podcast interview. So just dig in, chomp down on the information that both of them are going to be sharing. You're going to hear things about watchmaking. You're going to hear things about how to get into watchmaking, how to, you know, keep your passion going. But just take it easy and just listen to it and let me know what you think.
Cheers.
Thank All you, right. Anthony from No Bullshit Watchmaker. Everyone, my name is Henry Lee of Watchmaking Project. I'm here with Heinrich Korpela from KHWCC from Locklea, Switzerland. Obviously, Mr. Korpela needs no introduction, but I'm still going to have a new introduction. So, myself, I don't want to go too much into it, but I run a small, very small private service center in New York. And obviously, everyone knows No BS Watchmaker. He has such a following and such clout in the industry. He has an Amazon number, I think one or two, book out. So please check that out. And without further ado, I'm going to let Heinrich Korpela kind of give a bit information about his background, biography, where he came from, what he was doing, how what led him to here, him being here today.
All right, So a little bit background, maybe if people don't know so much about me. I come from Sweden. I learned the watchmaking in the Swedish watchmaking school. It has transformed into another school today, but more or less the same. I worked also in Sweden for 3 years. Okay. Learned the basics of watch repair, a little bit of restoration skills as well, and clocks, which was very, very good experience. I moved quickly over after 3 years to Switzerland, Zurich, to learn the modern watch production for a company called Ventura at that time. They are probably still running with new watches.
So he's being modest, right? At Ventura, he was kind of the head kind of production manager.
I started as a junior, just at the production. What was very surprising was the level of cleanliness that was required in a Swiss watch at the time. And I appreciated very, very much what I learned there. Even though that it wasn't the most expensive product, it was a really interesting learning curve and really different from Swedish watchmaking. Because it's new watches, so you have to be, they have to be extremely clean.
Okay.
And I struggled a lot in the beginning, but I got the hang of it and learned another skill. 3 years later, I went to Vostep as a student at first.
So before that, the interest in being a watchmaker in Switzerland encouraged you to go delve deeper, go to essentially the Harvard of watchmaking schools is Vostep.
Yeah.
So he there was something, there was an itch he wanted to scratch, and you essentially went. Did you save any money when you went for it, or you just like, I'm going to quit my job, I want to do all this stuff? Like, what was your process behind that?
It was always the same in Sweden. I saved for 3 years, wherever I worked. I didn't get a very, very high salary.
Okay.
And it took me 3 years just to save the money to get the ticket for the airfare or whatever. Okay. And then I got there, and it was the same thing in when I worked in Zurich. It took me 3 years to get the funding, to get the money enough to pay for the refresher course, which was my big, big dream. I didn't think I would get it that early. 6 years after the Swedish Watchmaking School, I was already a student in Vostep, which was huge highlight in my career. I mean,
every watchmaker, if they had a chance, Vostep is the place they got. It's a Harvard of watchmaking schools.
Absolutely.
That's the, what is it, the Hogwarts, essentially, of the watch industry.
Right? It's the main
This is the main place that everyone refers to, right?
Exactly.
So, now, Heinrich, what's your recommendation to someone that actually wants to get into watchmaking and is in that position where they want to learn watchmaking, but they don't live in an area where watchmaking is taught?
I think the most important is that you have the passion and you really want to do it. And never give up this passion, no matter where you are in the world. Because there is 1,001 different ways to get into watchmaking. Some people don't even go to the school, and they are great watchmakers. They might take later on some courses with AWCI or some short courses in Vostep or even in my school now, which I have. So never ever give up your dream. So if you have the dream, there are solutions wherever you are in the world.
Now, your average time to learn in a watchmaking school is about 2 years, give or take.
That has become kind of the standard,
and I think you have a program out that's
2 years also. It's an intensive 2 years since I want the students to get really the maximum. When I was in Sweden, it was 3 years.
So when he means 2 years maximum, it's a 2 year intensive course watchmaking. So it's a full skill course where a person comes in who has rudimentary hand skills, hand-eye coordination, and it's developed into, developed into the tactile watchmaker that can respond to modern day's needs for either vintage watch, a complicated watch, a modern timepiece, like you name it, the watchmaker will come out of a full course can do this, right? But some courses, like be wary, some courses can do it, some courses can't. Like just make sure you do your research, right? It's important you look who you're learning from, who the source of the knowledge is coming from. And you know, do your own research.
Well, Heinrich taught Wolfstep too. I know you're getting to there. I know you're instructed over.
Yeah. So let's take a step back.
Just a brief segment.
Let's go back to the Wolfstep.
So right now he at this stage, we segued from something else. But going back to what you're saying, you were taking a refresher course.
I took the refresher course, which was the highlight, I guess, of my career. Actually, it was a wonderful course, 5 months long. Super intensive. It when I look back on it, it reminds me of like when I watch videos of the training of or Navy SEALs in America. It was really that intensive, but on the watchmaking level, of course, not physically it also bonded us together. We were, I think, 10 or 11 students at the time in this course. We even printed out a t-shirt at the end of the course. We survived Wolfstep this and that course. Wow. And then it was all the names with the flags of the students. It was a totally magical period.
It was 5 months. 5 months intense.
Five months, and I mean, we were like monks. We were there all the time. We went there early morning, 7 o'clock or whatever.
Another setback. Wolfstep has this policy: if you're taking a course, the school's open for you as a student to do whatever you want to do. Right? And it's important because it fosters creativity. It fosters the student who essentially is kind of living their dream to ensure that they're pursuing their passion in 100% way, where the school's there, equipment's there, everything's there for them before school and after school. Because class starts at 8 o'clock, 8:30, I believe?
It starts at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
They all arrived at way early.
6:30, like, 7. Yeah, like everyone comes like 2 hours early, they leave 2 hours later. Yeah, and I can speak from experience. Like I did a course there, and as I was going out, I saw students still like working.
And it was because the students who came there, they felt that this is a very, very precious moment in their life that they only get one time in their life.
It's a once in a lifetime experience to be able to do this. Really? So everyone I spoke to who did a refresher course, they were there essentially like, it was 10 hours a day, 10 hour, 12 hour days.
And then Saturday, I was there every Saturday and Sunday as well, actually. Yeah.
So it was really like almost 7 days a week.
Probably 70, 80 hours a week.
It depends on the individual. There are people who go there.
Sure.
And they're like, okay, I'm here like from 8 to 5. Yeah. They like, it's like some people, so I only way I could equate to some people who work a job, right? They come they swipe 9 o'clock, they leave 5 o'clock, right? Yeah. But if you're passionate about what you're doing, work is not work.
Exactly, this is just passion.
It's a passion. It's a fun. You want to know more, like, you know, like watchmaking. You were there for like this. I want to finish his story, and I want to let him know what I feel his experience is.
So 5 months refresher course or Wolfstep, and then
which
the
way you will go from there. My teacher at that time was Paul Madden, a wonderful teacher. He went back there and he's teaching there now, and he noticed that I suddenly in my spare time or on the side I was suddenly starting to help other students with what I have understood, and then I started to help other, this is how you measure this and that in timing or whatever, and he noticed that. So at the end of the course, they was to ask me, would you like to teach here?
Oh, shoot.
And my plan was absolutely not to be a teacher. I decided when I was like 8 years old that that's not the job I want to have, to teach, because it looks really scary and embarrassing and so on.
But man,
so and
you got a knack for teaching though.
So. Yeah, luckily it also became later a passion for me. But my goal was actually to go to try to become hired by Christoph Clary and learn the more complicated and exotic mechanical timepieces, a lot of finishing complications.
Yeah. I mean, that's every watchmaker's dream, right? To work on complications, because everyone's stuck working on mechanical pieces.
Exactly, but you know, if Volstep asks you that question, it's not that you can say no.
You can't.
I mean, you just can't. You just have to take it.
Who doesn't want
to? It's like Harvard asking you, we need someone to teach here. Would you be able to teach? You have to say yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Even if, and how long did that last? What course were we teaching? Like, I mean, I know a lot of people who left for professional courses under this guy, right? A lot of people that work in the industry now who are pretty high up in technical positions in the watch industry.
Yeah.
So this guy is almost, I mean, I don't want to say teacher of teachers, but he's, at this stage, I feel like he is. So, yeah, but continue, going back to the
experience. So what I did was, I took the professional course myself, and directly after, I became the assistant to Stephen McDonald at that time.
And Stephen McDonald's is complication.
He was also the teacher in the complication course. And I think he also made one of the products for Maximilian Busser and Friends. He was a very impressive perpetual calendar he made for them, designed for them.
But going back to that, so there was a short period in MOSEP where complication courses were being taught.
Yeah, in
a junction to refresher course, all these other short courses, and it was only for that time period because that time period can't be reproduced because of, I don't want to say this, but the complication course I felt was ego driven. It was up to the whoever was the instructor how the material can turn out because you were given a watch, and you were saying
a client's watch also.
It was a high pressure environment.
It felt a little bit more like that course felt a little bit more like you have to prove yourself. Because they use also real clients' watches actually, and you can't fail.
Which was good. I'm not saying it's bad. So they took a bunch of watchmakers and they essentially made them the diamonds, right? They pressured them to the point where the growth was inevitable, and now these people are leading the industries in technical advances in where we are today.
They probably got a lot of key positions in the industry.
They own their own places.
Or they are independent watchmakers and so on.
So going back to, so after you finished your course, you began to teach refresher courses.
Yeah, I became first assistant under Stephen McDonald.
Okay.
Just to learn
the style of teaching
and see him actually teach, which was really, really interesting. And then after that refresher course, I did my own two. So I did two subsequent refresher courses after that.
So you did two refresher courses back to back?
Yeah, exactly. And that's after that. One of my students, because it goes in, it's like a heritage. So the last one that I took, I also recognized there is somebody here in this class who has to take over my position.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time it was Andrea Kolla. I felt that he was like the absolute perfect
candidate to take over my position there.
And after that, I took the complicated course, turning course, shopping course, escapement course, and other courses as well, train the trainer course. Basically, I took all the watchmaking courses that were available at that time.
He was living the watchmaker's dream, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Okay. And that was so brilliant at that time. And,
I mean, I can imagine it felt kind of unreal.
Yeah, for sure.
Living your dream, you're teaching.
Yeah.
You're teaching and learning. Courses, you're learning. I mean,
very academic, really academic, nice world of learning to understand the true watchmaking.
So how long was your tenure? How long were you at Wolstep for the entire duration?
Felt probably like 50 years or something, but it was only 5 years in then. But that's very long in Wolstep Neuchâtel. Yeah. But Andrea, he has beaten my record long, long time ago. Yeah. He has survived like 10, 15 years, so I don't know. He's there very, very long time now.
Okay.
But so at that time, it was really high power or high charged, and to survive more than 5 years would not be easy for anybody. But after all these courses I took, it led up to me teaching the complete training, the 2-year course.
Oh, okay.
Then I did teach the full training.
How many times did you teach the full training?
Only one time. And I already knew when I started to teach it that this is the, my last course, because that means that now I have been there 5 years and it's perfection. You end it like
you
this.
You felt it was time for growth.
Yeah, it was time to move on after 5 years.
You've kind of accepted the knowledge that is given to you,
yeah,
and that it's time for you to take it and essentially make it your own, absorb it, and grow from it.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce Lee quote, baby.
Now I had all that knowledge, so it felt like natural. That
the
now
next step is to grow from it. Right? Yeah, take this, make it your own. How do you deliver what you've learned from the years' experience working and teaching and learning into future generations of watchmakers?
Yeah, yeah. And also at that time, actually, I was working for a Swiss watch manufacturer when I was doing the courses.
Can you say who you were?
Normally, I can't officially say it, because everyone who works with these companies, they have an NDA. Because they are supposed to do it on their own. But in Switzerland, at that time, there were a lot of subcontractors that helped
to produce it.
Yeah, I was a subcontractor because there was so much production at the time.
I know the company you're talking about, it's a really high-end brand. Trust me. It produces top-notch stuff that ends up on people's
home. Yeah, yeah. And that I did after my general study teaching in Vostep. I went home at 5, 6 o'clock, and then I continued to produce these watches until 11 o'clock.
This touches upon what I want to say about Heinrich, right? I've known this man for about 5, 6, 7 years, and the knowledge, the wisdom, the experience he has beats most watchmakers that's worked in the industry for 30 years. Why? He's lived it and breathed it 24 hours a day for 15 years, 15, 20 years. You compound that, right? If you're doing 20-hour days, 18-hour days, you're not a normal watchmaker. You've met people. You've done stuff. You've made mistakes. I feel like he's done everything in the books to make him the man he is today. And this guy doesn't have a gray hair. Look at his hair. I stress more than him. And I have a workshop. I have like a bunch of people to rely on me. Like, look how relaxed he is.
I may not work 18 hours a day or anything, but I feel that all my time goes into the watchmaking. So some days I might only work 10, 12 hours a day or whatever. It's not only that I'm stressed out or anything. It's just I have an abundance of time because I'm nothing else.
His 10-12 hours working as a watchmaker is not, I'm going to fix this detent. I'm not going to fix this escapement. It's, how do I fix the jewel on the palette? How do I fix a ballot? How do I even out a palette jewel? How do I make stuff more efficient? How can I mass produce these Valjoux 72 movement springs? Right? It's high level conceptual stuff that he comes up with, and then his school is essentially the research. It's like
anybody could have actually done it, because think about it. I don't have any. I don't really care so much about friends.
Thanks. Yeah. In my face.
Sorry.
Okay. Now.
Cheers. No, but honestly.
Cheers, Anthony.
Cheers, Anthony. Honestly, my priority is always to learn more and more, because I'm very curious about how things work in the watchmaking world.
His curiosity is to make watchmaking more efficient, grow it, to ensure that
how to make it better and faster.
Yes. He's done stuff that machines do, that he's like, this is how you reduce it by hand. Right? He's done that research. He sat there like, how do I make this look like this? Right? I've been in the workshop where there's cows. He's like, hey, look at this cow, I'm working on this. And I'm like, holy shit, dude. Really? And it's like, yeah, this is it. Right? He'll sit
and then
12 hours a day, he'll sit here and try to manage and figure out how can he make his students' life easier. Right?
Yeah,
and that's the important part, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to make people's life easier, better, and try to reproduce results.
That's my main thing, Right. My main thing, what I like to do now, is to research about how to make, for example, spare parts in restoration.
That's a huge topic.
In a very easy way that everybody can do it with less skills, and it's quite fast and competitive. And it must, of course, the quality must maintain top quality, of course. That's what interests me today. How can watchmakers around the world, in their daily situation, make a hammer for a Valjoux 22, for example? And I had Jack over a few weeks ago, and then I did this concept with a pantograph together with profile projector.
Yep.
And I just had an idea, let's try this, and I only had one student at the time, so he became the pilot student for this this first course, and we took a risk.
He's a guinea pig.
Yeah, guinea pig, yeah.
But no offense, student, you're doing well for the industry.
Yeah.
Now, is that something you teach in your restoration course as well, or...?
Well, I don't really have a... it's a very new concept.
It depends on where you're at.
And by the way, I'm not the only one who do this.
Yeah,
the idea came first from George Daniels' book when he was spoking out wheels with a pantograph as an idea. But now there are Japanese watchmakers who actually cut out parts with a pantograph, and also Austrian, Swiss, and German and so on. So I was thinking, if they do that, but there's no school to teach that, I have to bring that back into the school and show
it's a growing
thing.
You have to be able to like learn to do the measurements.
Yeah,
right?
Learn exactly.
To get the stuff right. So, okay, we veered really far from what we discussed originally. Going back to your progress, right? Right now, you've just left Wolfstep. You're charting out how to grow from where you're doing. What happens after Wolfstep? Where do you go next? You have the experience working with complication
so
watches.
I was working for this company with a complication, so on 4 hour a day to get the money to buy
equipment
and tools for restoration.
That's every watchmaker's dream. Like, we all save up money to buy lathes, to buy cheap bores, fucking machines.
Exactly.
Collets, like, you name it. We save money for tools, essentially. Like, my issue with my workshop, I'll never make money, is because every time we make enough, it's like, oh, Wishy has this new time machine that I need to buy that's like $8,000-$9,000. Like, that's where the money goes, right? Like, it's a never-ending struggle. And a part, if something goes, God forbid, something's wrong with your Swiss timing machines or your microscopes or your water pressure machine.
Which costs a fortune.
It's a couple hundred dollars for a freaking part. And then the shipping. And then you're going to deal with customs. So, okay, it's a thing. I'm not going to go into this. That could be another session where I complain about the state of how much everything costs. But going back to what you were saying.
What were I saying?
You were talking about how you were leaving Wolfstep, working to save money to buy.
Yeah, I got a rare opportunity then. So I was working, I knew that I was coming to the end with the trading course. And then I was just thinking of finding a regular watchmaking job in Chris O'Clarie or whatever companies doing interesting. That was my plan anyway, but I never got to that stage because my my manager or boss at that time in this company which I produced the watches for, he asked me, "Oh, Henrik, would you like to open your own watchmaking school like Wolfstep, but in your own regard?" And then I was thinking, "Yes,
that's a lifetime.
I mean,
opportunity.
A lifetime opportunity. I mean, it would have been stupid to say no because economically he would have also supported me throughout the entire process."
That's awesome.
And that was really awesome, and
it's supported through a foundation, not from the company itself.
It's not corporate.
It's not for them. It's like a tax write-off. It's like how Rolex has the Rolex Foundation here.
For them, it was probably not a tax write-off or not. It was also I think it was actually a real passion behind the people who wanted to do it. It's not like they just want to save money or whatever. It's really that they honestly wanted this money to go into higher education of watchmakers because they see it as an art which needs to be protected.
Yep.
And sure enough, I took the chance immediately and went with my own school.
That's how KHWCC started. Okay, so explain the name.
The name came up in a meeting with the people who were involved from the foundation and me. And at the time, we were also two other watchmakers who helped me. I was supposed to go with one of my friends in the refresher course and another teacher from Wolfstep at that time.
Okay.
And we decided to build that together. But it's a long story why I'm the only one left today. But it's we can go into that in another video. Anyway, it's complicated.
Using my line.
Anyway, it's not anything bad or anything. It's just it didn't work out at that moment.
It's life. People move on.
Yeah, and not everybody have the possibility to participate in something this large and kind of risky. because we didn't know where this is going.
It's 120.
And if you have, a family, I'm not sure you wanna, you know, put all your eggs in the basket. I had nothing to lose, so it was obvious why I had to take
the shot. All or nothing.
Yeah,
it's like Vegas, baby. It's for all the dices.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good.
And then off I went. In 2009, I started to build a school. Basically, immediately after I graduated the full training in Boston, I went off to build install all the machines in the building and so on.
How much was that? How much time did it take to like kind of build everything from scratch? I know you had an idea for most of it, but there are ideas that you have.
I'm sure that
you
was the. Yeah. I mean, I already had the ideas were already there because I have worked 5 years in Boston. So everything was crystal clear what I wanted. And it has remained exactly the same today. We have just added tools since we started it. And it turned out to be a great concept. And it's just growing and growing every year. And we probably invested something between, I don't know, 600,000-800,000, if not close to $1 million Swiss francs in tools. Wow. It's like a super school. Wow. For only five or six students in two classrooms.
And to be fair, it's a niche space, his school. His school isn't for everyone, right? If you want a job, if you want to go to watchmaking school, get a job, listen, there are plenty of watchmaking schools out there that you could go to for 2 years, a year maybe for a technician course, leave, get a job. But if you want to really get into the like weeds of watchmaking, and I don't mean this to sell Heinrich, like by all means, like I respect you as a person, I respect your skills. I took courses from him. I took courses from you, right? And I felt like that's benefited me a lot as a watchmaker because there are times where it's like, I need to make something. I need to make something a certain way. How can I replicate this finish in a way where I can, that the customer is like, oh, Henry didn't screw up this watch, you know, but in a way where it's like a crafted screw that looks like a watch. Like I've done that. Like I've sent him pictures of like, hey, this is where I'm at. This is where I need to be. He's like, oh, try this or try that. Like, you're giving me honest advice.
Yeah.
You're giving me
yeah.
feedback on stuff that I need to do as a professional watchmaker, right? So I feel like there's always room and growth for learning, whether you are starting out watchmaking or you're a professional watchmaker. You can always expand your cup of tea.
Right? Even if the school, it's not really a niche school or anything. I had students who had no money. They were not rich or anything. The school is not—it's not expensive. There is a high cost
in living in Switzerland.
We are in Switzerland. Yeah. It's a high rent, and so on. So, but I had several students who had no money, but they found sponsors. So, there is many ways you can actually get to me. You even if you don't have the money, you might start researching if there is any local watchmakers in your area who have a shop, and maybe they want to hire a watchmaker and send you to training.
So even if, let's just say, like, they don't have that much money to stay for too long, but I think you have a new program that's like...
I have several new programs. This year I started a technician course.
Yeah.
The concept came because there is still a huge need for watchmakers. They don't have to be, you know, they don't have to do balanced offs and so on. But the bigger market, I think, for watchmakers is that they can repair watches.
Yes.
Overhaul. Yeah. That's we need more people in this field.
Properly overhaul.
Yeah, good
like
overhaul.
A decent
clean.
Overhaul person.
Yeah. And that's why I created two technician courses. One would be 8 months, which has also a final exam. This final exam will be assessed by Swiss watchmakers so that we maintain the same level. Yeah.
But before he even goes there, right? Explain your testing procedure.
It's
for
similar
all
to
students,
step.
Right? So it's stringent. Like whoever the final, he has, so hiring has no say at the student, at the final test for student watches. It's industry experts.
I don't check that.
Who inspects the watches.
That we can't really say, but yes.
Oh, shit.
So we have to edit that out, but it doesn't matter. So I have people from either...
So you have industry guys
examining...
It's not normal industry guys. These are high-level industry people who are reviewing these final student pieces.
Yeah.
And they're reviewing at such a level where, like, these are high-complication watchmakers who work on really expensive... It's like tier one, you know, it's okay. like...
So Heinrich, do you actually examine these, or do you let these guys?
No, they check everything according to what they think is good watchmaking, and therefore I would like to hire people from the Swiss watchmaking industry who work with the things that I used to be working with, because that's where I draw the inspiration from. But I don't want to check that myself.
So it doesn't make any sense. So these guys are practically getting peer reviewed, almost as if, like, it's in a medical field where other people are reviewing their work.
Yes, it was the same in Vostep. I took the inspiration from Vostep. I don't want to check my students' final exam.
It's biased, right?
Yeah, it's biased. Yeah.
And he maintains autonomy in the whole. If someone asks them what's the testing criteria, it's like, oh, this high level brand, this really high complicated watchmaker who works on all this stuff, tests my student, and this was his results. So if there's a question, you go to this brand and you question their results.
Yeah.
So your students, I know your students actually get into a lot of high end companies that they're actually sought out after, correct?
They go everywhere. Independent, famous brands, groups.
But the technician course that you have out allows them to actually repair watches and get certified, not with enough understanding yet as a complete watchmaker.
It's not a complete watchmaker. Yeah. There is one month's micro mechanics in the 8 months course, but it's just to warm up and give some sort of introduction that they can make simple tools, like if they want to make a Horia pusher or anvil, they can actually do that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, awesome. Okay, and so this is a nice intro class for them to get into watchmaking.
I think in many regards, I believe that it's gonna be in the future seen as it's almost like a watchmaker in many countries actually.
Yeah.
Where they don't do as extreme high end as in Switzerland. In most countries, I think this technician course level would be regarded as a proper watchmaker.
Oh, that's awesome! And that's 8 months, only 8 months.
But it's intensive 8 months. There are several exams, intermediate exams. The intermediate exam, I always check.
Uh-huh.
And I try to be as strict as possible, okay, so that they get ready for the more scary final exam.
So, one of the questions were, what advice would you have for new and future and upcoming watchmakers entering the field? And kind of what are your thoughts about the field, the industry now for them as they come out? Because it's a small field, and you know there's only a few entering the industry, and
do you mind if I take this first?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead. So, for people who want to do watchmaking, who's interested in it, find watchmakers, chat with them, go to their workshop, pick their brains, bring them out to coffee, go for drinks, ask what a typical day-to-day is for them in a small shop, ask a watchmaker who works in a Richmond, a Swatch group, find out their life, find out the life person who works at FP Jorn, like, just do your research, right? Do your due diligence, that's number one. Second, there's a ton of information online, right? Go to YouTube. Go to Google. There's people who write blogs about building stuff, about writing stuff, about how they built their first watch, how they got into watchmaking. There's online courses, right? Again, I don't want to name drop, but there's courses online that show you basics, fundamentals of watchmaking skills, but it depends on the person who's teaching it, how in-depth they go, what the principles are teaching, and this falls in later in our conversation about the concepts of teaching, right? That's about like the first two basic levels. Do research. Second is go online and find out what you can, because if you spend a couple hundred dollars on a course, on an online course, it's better than wasting a couple thousand or maybe 20, 30, 50, or maybe even up to $80,000 to find out
if that's the right path.
If that's the right path for you. Yeah. You have to go to, let's say, Switzerland, or have to go move to Florida or move to Texas if you're in the United States. For that, that's kind of the final stage, is like, make the actual move if you want to do it. And when you do want to do it, make sure the school you're going to is the correct school for the path you want to take in watchmaking. And I'm prefacing this because there are schools that will take you for 2 years and teach you what his school can teach you in 6 months or 7 months. Right?
Yes, a lot of people think that the duration in school equates to quality, kind of.
And skill, it doesn't. Yeah, right? No, it's the research.
thoroughly, ask former alumni, ask people who recently graduated, ask people who graduated in the past, because I know of schools in the past where there were very highly esteemed instructors who kind of spearheaded the school program, and then when they left, the school kind of like degraded and kind of became this normal former shell of what it originally was.
Yeah, but they still have a good reputation.
Yes, because who started.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, that's my spiel on it.
All right, Heinrich, what's yours?
So I started watchmaking in 1995. Or the watchmaking school, actually, in 1995. And it has only got better. So, if you hear people complaining about the watchmaking state and so on, This is not good advice, because it's not really true. I've been around since 1995. The only thing I have seen is that watchmaking is just becoming better and better every year. More and more
is more complicated.
It is ridiculous how interesting this profession today is. Yes. You can do. There's so many opportunities for all of us, and you can almost choose what you want to do. When I started watchmaking, the only possibility you had was to repair old watches. That's it, vintage watches or whatever. Quite boring. But now you have all these independents, but not only the independents. Let's not forget the larger industry like Rolex, Richemont, Swatch Group. They also make a lot of more interesting products. They are hiring more watchmakers. And I think it's a little bit unfair to criticize the industry, and I don't think it helps much either, because if we look back in the past, watchmaking has never been as great as it is today. It's amazing.
I think we're at the pinnacle of where we should be as watchmakers. Because
it's only going to be better also.
Because look at all the technological growth and enhancements that we've had with technology, right?
Yeah.
Like parts that used to be handmade like for weeks and months now can be done in a matter of like seconds and minutes.
Sure.
Right?
Also
the technological advances, right?
Yeah.
But you would require someone to hand finish it afterwards, depending on the level of competency of that
one style of watchmaker.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean,
and then you have the total handcrafted or handmade watch. It's very, very rare product. But there are a few watchmakers around the world who also do that. And then we have the semi-handmade watch, where some parts are completely handmade and some are done machine, for example.
I mean,
and then a lot of hand finishing.
That's what you see a lot typically in
you have everything industry represented in this industry today. Yes, it has never been as interesting as it is today.
All right, so Heinrich, for those watchmakers who actually just graduated school or who are just entering the field, and they look at the industry kind of a little bleak, And what advice do you have for them?
You're looking at it from a very wrong perspective. It's mm-hmm. not bleak at all.
Yeah.
It's only positive. I don't know what kind of details you're focusing on, but it seems to be just details. You have to get on maybe some sort of an overall picture and take the past in, because if you compare to the 1980s watchmaking compared to today, there is an enormous difference. And I know that many people are complaining about spare parts accounts and so on. Well, then move away. If you don't like it, move away to another brand. You know, I don't really 100% understand the complaints.
You're in the US, he doesn't know about the FTC and the Federal Trade Commission and how all that stuff is handled. So right now there's a case, I don't want to be current, but like there's an ongoing battle that they're finding out whether or not it's legal that these brands are withholding parts, not allowing the US market to service and repair US market pieces and ensuring that it has to go back to Switzerland or wherever the origin of it is, because that's essentially a monopoly.
Yeah,
right?
That's market
control over a product, where from the brand perspective, I understand, but as an independent watchmaker, it's not as fair if someone brings me, let's say, a high-end piece. I need to go to a brand, and obviously I would show my workshop. I would show my credentials, I would show what I can do, I would show where I've worked before. There'd be a whole backstory and ensure that the company knows that I can handle the timepiece with my credentials, with what I've done in the past, with the workshop in mind, but that's still not a thing. It's still very tightly regulated by the industry because of because of their rules, right? Essentially, like, I mean, we've all had the Swiss sent you a letter say, like, this is, you know, not, you can't do this. So, you know, it's kind of a cease and desist. So what can you do? As a small workshop owner, I don't have the clout that they do. I used to work with them, right? I used to be a watchmaker under them, yeah. So I know kind of the ins and outs of a lot of things, but yeah.
Yeah, so for newer watchmakers generally, I think the easiest step is to get into like places where they have parts available and that they're authorized.
Yeah, or work for just independence. So you
can, yeah, exactly. Or work as independents and just really get your hands-on experience with them.
Or work inside of a Rolex, inside of
Richmond. Yeah, work inside for these companies and stuff. That also works.
Do everything. If you start out
watchmaking, there's so many possibilities.
Do everything. Like, you'll run into issues with a watch. Just work on it. Just do it. Yeah. Like it's going to be a constant thing where it's like some stuff you don't know, but that's where you learn. If something you run into you don't know, that's where the growth begins, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Like, how many times you sat there looking at a watch like, how do I do this?
Yeah, right. You have to figure it out.
Whether it's like, how do I open this watch, or like, how do I fix this watch?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
You have to figure it out. Yeah.